Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now. Hi, thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Overcoming Your Emotional Eating. Today's podcast is one that I run through a number of things around non-nutritive sweeteners, what they can do inside your body and what they can't do, what we know from research and what we're learning. Non-nutritive sweeteners are something that have been around for a very long time, and the research on them is very up and down, is not definitive in one place or another. But we are seeing a lot of trends, and it is imperative to recognize what those trends are and what they mean for you in particular based on what you drink and what you eat and how much non-nutritive sweetener you consume now and how much you've consumed in the past. It's really important that we take our health on various levels in our own hands and recognize that not always are the products that we create necessarily intended for overconsumption. Many of my clients for many years that I've worked with have taken in larger quantities of non-nutritive sweeteners in hopes that it would curb sugar cravings, in hopes that it would reduce caloric intake. The research actually says the converse, which is super interesting. And I'll talk about this research on today's podcast. So take a listen to see what you could glean and understand more about your body and your health and what non-nutritive sweeteners might mean for you and how they could be impacting you. It's really important that we are always and continue to be empowered around our knowledge with our food, our weight, and additives that we have in our food in our country. Thank you so much for listening. I always hope to add value to your life and what you're doing with your food and your body and your weight. And take a look at my website, www.wendyfrancis.com. Lots of new things coming out this year, whether you want to just dive in and take a read on my new experiential workbook, Overcoming Your Emotional Eating, or you want to jump into my online course, E3, End Your Emotional Eating, sign up for a group or get on my mailing list so I can let you know about events and speaking engagements coming up later on in this year. Thank you so much for joining me and for listening for yourself as always.
So this weekend has been an interesting weekend, realistically. I've had a number of things happen, but one of which was a death in my family. And that, you know, for anyone that's lost somebody, there is a process to the grief. And we know this. For me, there's a variety of ebbs and flows that happen in grief because I've done this a number of times now. I wish I could say I hadn't, but I guess it's just a part of aging, is that we lose close people to us within our familial infrastructure. So I've recognized that part of what helps me heal in the momentum process during the time where I'm in more of an acute grief orientation is work, which may sound strange, but work has always been a really healing place for me. It's a place where I go and time slips away. And so tonight, I'm really focusing on something that is really near and dear to my heart because I recognized it a long time ago before research came out. Not that I'm that amazing. There was many people, practitioners, that were recognizing this. We just didn't have the research to back it up. Conversely, we also had somebody come on one of our group calls here a few weeks ago that mentioned this. So I'm doing this call based on a caller's input. And there's a lot of information today, and I may wind up doing a follow-up call on this, but it not only helped me, but I really, my intention always is to help you all to see things in a different light, to understand something different about yourself, your body, your mind, your soul, your psyche, in whichever way it is. Today will be a lot on the body, realistically. And there will be a lot of research, but as I always do, I'll break it down for you so you can really understand what I'm trying to say. Many, many, many years ago now, I was trying to put a number on it. It's definitely above 20, maybe 25. I was starting my private practice in Charlotte, North Carolina, and had begun that and was doing some consulting work while I was kind of bringing up my private practice. And I was consulting with a physician in her practice who was a bariatric physician. She did a lot of weight loss. I was coaching her business and also helping her with patients. And we were recognizing how many of her clients were using a lot of diet sodas. I mean, 16, 24, 36 ounces and above a day. And I said to her, you know, I recognize this in my private practice world because I work with eating disorders, and it's very well known in the eating disorder community. Unfortunately, many girls overuse, and men who have eating disorders, particularly anorexia, overuse diet sodas for a variety of reasons. But we were recognizing it around her patients who were trying to lose weight. And so I talked to her about it because I said, you know, I recognize this in my private practice, but I'm kind of working with a different parameter here. What do you recognize? And she said, you know, for years, we've been talking about this at the bariatrician conferences, and we can't make hide nor hair of it because it doesn't make sense. Why would artificial sweeteners and weight gain be linked? Because artificial sweeteners were made to do the opposite, right? So the first diet soda that was out on the market, Tab, right? Tab one calorie, that, you know, and then we moved into Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi, now we have diet everything. And the more that we have on the market, the more the country has gained weight. Now, I am not by any means pinning weight gain solely on artificial sweeteners, but I do want you to see what we are now finding research-wise. Super, super interesting to see what artificial sweeteners do and mean for you. So first and foremost, what are artificial sweeteners? Most artificial sweeteners are more accurately called non-nutritive sweeteners, just you NNS, so you kind of get an idea, because they provide very few calories and no nutrients. So things like acesulfamine, potassium, ACE-K, sucralose, saccharin, steviol glycosides, that's different than stevia, and potentially monk fruit. The latter two are often considered natural because they originally come from plants, but be careful because they can be highly processed in a lab. Aspartame is technically a nutritive sweetener, though it can be used in very small amounts. So aspartame is also on this list, but it's more considered a nutritive sweetener. Sugar alcohols such as sorbitol, mannitol, and xylitol are another type of low-calorie sweetener, but they are not considered NNS. They do contain some carbohydrates, although much less than regular sugar. And sugar alcohols, such as sorbitol and mannitol, I'm going to kind of leave out of the conversation today because we do not have enough research on those at all. When most people think of foods with artificial sweeteners, diet drinks and candies are really what come to mind. It's interesting now, though, as I look at it now, versus 20, 25 years ago, I mean, it really was just diet drinks and candies that we knew had some of these non-nutritive sweeteners. But more and more, there was a lot of regular sugar put in a lot of foods that we wouldn't necessarily think would be there. So, for example, English muffins, bread has sugar in it. Ketchup has sugar in it. A lot of sauces that you buy have sugar in it. Now, because everybody wants to be sugar-free or light or diet, that the reality is we are using now a lot more of the non-nutritive sweeteners in those. So now we have even more non-nutritive sweeteners in our life than ever, or I should say in our food than ever, realistically. So the majority of the research, though, that I'll talk about today we'll deal more with the research that we've done on diet drinks and non-nutritive sweeteners and diet drinks and what they've done with respect to health and weight gain. Because, again, this surgence in our food over the last couple of years really has just happened. So we don't know enough, unfortunately, about what that will do. But let's focus solely on understanding what we do know. So research suggests that amounts of non-nutritive sweeteners below the acceptable daily intake may have adverse effects on health, including an increased risk for type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, cancer, and heart disease. For example, a 2019 study published in the journal Stroke found that women consumed 24 ounces or more of diet drinks a day had a 35% higher risk of heart disease, a 26% increased risk of stroke, and a 19% risk of dying early from any cause. That's a really profound study. Now, I'm not here to bash non-nutritive sweeteners. I'm here just to open your eyes to what else it can create. When we look at type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome, obviously, if in fact you have an increased risk for those things, then you will have an increased risk for weight gain. The prevalence of non-nutritive sweetener consumption is much higher, we now know. Research has proven this among persons with obesity relative to the general population. So they've actually done research now based on this conversation I had 20-something years ago with this bariatric physician. Research now is showing what we were seeing anecdotally. The replacement of added sugars with non-nutritive sweeteners reduces the calorie content of the foods and the beverages, right? So we know the calorie content is reduced. The consumption of non-nutritive sweeteners may lower total calorie and sugar intakes. However, findings of observational studies demonstrate that consumption of non-nutritive sweeteners is consistently associated, though, with higher energy intake, weight gain, an increase of cardiometabolic disease, and the observational studies are supported by mechanistic studies in animal models. Okay, what in the world did I just say? So here's the cool thing, and I wish you guys were all sitting in like a lecture hall with me, because this is where I love like the teaching part of what I do. So what this is saying, if you're not following, which is different to do it auditory than visual, these number of observational studies that show that consuming non-nutritive sweeteners is associated with an increased calorie intake, with an increase in weight gain, with an increase in cardiometabolic disease. It's also saying that these observational studies, they're also seeing in animal models. Okay, so that's what it means. So what we're seeing is an increase in weight gain with an increased intake of non-nutritive sweeteners. Now, other research may not be as indicative, but it's certainly worth taking a look at. If we presuppose that this could be true, then I think we need to look at why it might be true. So let's not just take it for maybe it's true, maybe it's not. There really are mechanisms behind why this could potentially be true. And I say potentially because we've had a hard time in the last 40 years proving negative things around non-nutritive sweeteners. It's kind of like one research study says one thing and then another one says the next. But I think for anybody that's going to consume greater than 8 to 10 ounces of non-nutritive sweetener a day, you need to heed some research. It's very, very important. And now that it's in our food, we need to look at it even more. I want to press on somebody to get a hold of somebody to do more research on this, because now that we have it in our food, we really need to understand more about what it does in our body. But why would it do this? You know, this is the thing that the doctor, I don't want to mention her name, but the doctor and I were talking about so many years ago, because it doesn't make sense, right? So you put this stuff on the market and it's supposed to help people reduce their energy or calorie intake, and that's supposed to lead to weight loss. Now, obviously, we know much more now about food and weight loss than ever, right? And it's not about calories. That's the premise of the plan I work with. That's the premise of the doctors I work with. And that's why I love the plan that we have devised around food, because it's not just about food. It's about food and psychology and physiology. And in that, the truth is it's not a calorie in, calorie out thing. We know that now. But why would non-nutritious sweeteners be associated with weight gain? Well, there are some reasons, super interesting, that I wanted to show you guys today. So what we're thinking, right, and these are theories, but some of these theories actually are supported by studies. There's a disassociation of the sensation of sweet taste from caloric intake that may confuse the brain and disrupt appetite regulation. Okay, I'm going to break that down. So what this is saying, and what we had thought to be true, is what they found in this study. Well, there's a rat study that supports this, I'll tell you about. But the truth is, so if you taste sweet on the tongue and sweet doesn't go into the body, your body gets ready for sweet, so to speak. Your body's like, oh, there's something really sweet coming down the pipe, and nothing comes. So that then can confuse the brain and it can confuse the body. One study that supports this is a rat study in which the animals were fed either yogurt sweetened with glucose or yogurt sweetened with saccharin. The results showed that animals fed the saccharin-laced yogurt ate more yogurt and gained weight. Why? So here's why we're thinking, right? Because when they ate it, the yogurt with the real sugar, the reality is that they dropped that kind of regulated their energy intake control. When they did not, when they ate it with the saccharin, that there's intense sweet taste, dropped their blood sugar, and then they had some cravings and hunger that came on later on in the day. Super interesting. We also know that artificial sweeteners, non-nutritive sweeteners, may alter taste preferences. Because the reality is aspartame, acesulfame, ACE-K, or acesulfame, potassium, saccharin, sucralose, and neotine are 180, 200, 300, 600, 7,000, and 13,000 times sweeter than sugar. So some experts really contend that the intense sweetness of these substances leads to taste distortion, essentially raising our sweet threshold. Now, I'm super interested in this report because one of the things around emotional eating that's coming out more and more in the literature is the sweet threshold that individuals with emotional eating have. And the more that they push that threshold, so the sweeter the food that you consume, the higher your sweet threshold goes. And then the sweeter your food you consume, the higher your sweet threshold goes. So after a while, individuals who are constantly consuming altered sweet taste or high sweet consumption, they need more sweet to break the barrier of threshold of feeling like they're getting that sweet taste. So when you look at the non-nutritive sweeteners, we know that they're much sweeter than regular sugar, and they can alter an individual's sweet taste. Consumers use diet products as a rationale for consuming more high-calorie foods. This is something that maybe everybody has seen. I know I have seen it. I know there's been memes about it, but somebody may get, you know, I wanted to say something, but maybe a large burger and large fries and get a diet soda to kind of counteract that. So then are we really balancing? Not necessarily. We do know this. We do know now that artificial sweeteners have an effect on gut metabolism. That is definite, and it does impact your gut microbiome. And the more that we learn about the gut microbiome and eating whole foods and staying away from things that are chemically processed, the more we're learning about health, the more we're learning about weight gain and weight loss, the more we're learning about a whole new industry that's going to open up over this year, I believe, to really help everybody be healthier. But it's true that artificial sweeteners do change the gut microbiome, which is not necessarily a good thing because it can influence glucose absorption from the intestine into the bloodstream. And that can obviously be a problem. We also recognize that artificial sweeteners can modify how the body handles sugar. So in another study, individuals who were categorized as obese were given either water or Splenda, sucralose, prior to a glucose challenge test. It was shown that the sucralose caused the blood sugar to peak at a higher level compared to the water, yet they're the same calorically, just so you guys understand that. So insulin levels also rose up about 20% higher in the sucralose group. So super interesting, right, that your insulin levels spike much, much higher when you consume sucralose. And we also know, so here's the final, and I could go on and on, but I only want to give it to you a little bit tonight because there's a lot to understand. We also know that artificial sweeteners have a direct effect on the appetite control center of the brain. This is really important when we're looking at weight gain, right? Rodent studies have shown that high levels of aspartate, which constitutes 40% of aspartame, are toxic to neurons in the arcuate nucleus of the hypothalamus. This is a key forebrain site that is important in appetite regulation. So if aspartame affects that, then it can affect your appetite control. And if you have an altered appetite control, it's awful hard to understand and know when you're hungry and when you're full. I know that today's been a lot of information, but it is really important that we understand. I know a lot of what I do is the psychology of weight loss and the psychology of eating, but it's also really important to understand the physiology. Because without the physiology, you know, we can't get a hold of the psychology. Just in fact, in that last kind of paragraph when we're talking about how things impact the brain, what we eat, what we drink can impact how our brain functions. So taking care of our trifecta, our physical, physiological, and psychological is truly the way to our success.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.